Hey, welcome to my show, Feng Shui Your Way on UK Health Radio. I'm Janine Lo, your go-to Feng Shui consultant and Chinese astrologer. I've been helping people transform their lives for over 20 years, from private clients to big names and businesses, and I can't wait to share my tips and stories with you.
Today, I'm absolutely delighted to be joined by a very special guest, Phil Webster, actor, author, life coach, and spiritual teacher. Phil's journey is both moving and extraordinary, from working in the world of film alongside international recognised actors to experience a profound personal loss that completely changed the direction of his life. He's gone on to help thousands of people bridge the space between intuition, healing and grounded practical, practical guidance. Today we'll be exploring his remarkable story, the work he does with clients and the inspiration behind his books, including a brand new release coming later this year. Phil, hello.
Hi, Janine. Thanks for having me.
That's okay. I do get a bit stuttery sometimes, so give me the chance to say it again because it comes out sometimes. And I'm like, yeah, I've said that. No, I've said that word wrong. So let our listeners tell you, Phil, can you begin by telling our listeners a little bit about your background, your journey from acting into the work you do today?
Sure. Yeah. Brief history. I haven't said this for a while. I grew up on the Isle of Wight. When I hit my 20s, I moved to Helsinki in Finland. I met a Finnish girl and thought I was madly in love. I was 22 or something like that. And then I ended up staying there a very long time. It was like a very good base to travel to other places from. So I traveled a lot. And that I kind of made that my home, essentially. But I ended up staying there for 20 years, which was quite excessive. I hit my 40s. And during that time while I was there, I kind of bounced around, did different jobs. Never really had my eyes on a career. So I kind of fed into things just through proximity. I was running bars and clubs at one point, and then I became a personal trainer for myself. But, you know, I didn't really put that much emphasis on work and what have you. I hit my 40s and I thought, okay, it's probably time to come home. So I came back to England with my fiance, who's Finnish, and I pursued acting, and I only really did that. It wasn't out of a need to be seen or anything like that. I'd just always kind of been obsessed with movies, and that seemed like the logical way to get into it. I didn't know how to be a producer or a director or anything like that. So very quickly got some minor success with that, and I was setting the ceiling quite low anyway. I wasn't under any illusions about it, setting Hollywood on fire in my 40s. And I very quickly got a few small parts. You know, I'd walk on and tell somebody that the king was coming on and then leave. And that was it, you know. And I was like, that's fine. But it didn't really scratch the itch I thought it would somehow. And while it was nice to be around creative people and what have you, again, it didn't really, I don't know. It didn't really fulfill me the way I thought it would. Anyway, after a good start with that and sort of paying the rent essentially through that, which was, you know, success for me, 2020 came along, and at the end of that, my mum passed away, as we went into 2021, and something that happened around her passing, very specifically, literally quite around her passing, was really the catalyst that just sent me in a completely different direction forever. What I believe was a supernatural event around her passing that I witnessed, that just shifted everything for me. And then that from there, I wrote a book and sort of documented my journey about learning about different spiritual practices. I really concentrated heavily on mediumship at the time. And I wrote a couple of books on mediumship, and it's just kind of sent me down this different path. And now I work with clients and I talk about lots of woo-woo things every day. And I've just finished a third book, and yeah, just gone in a completely different direction that feels to me like, oh, okay, this actually makes sense more than anything has. And yeah, I finally found my thing. So yeah, that was the short version.
Well, Phil, you've answered all my questions. I'm just going to rip up my piece of paper because you've gone into everything. So I'm going to take you back a little bit.
Yes, sorry, I rushed through it.
It's fine. If I get interviewed, I'm just like you. And they go, slow down. So, because I've done some history into you, you work with some incredible names in the film world, including Sylvester Stallone.
Yep.
Charlie Fanning. Is she the one in the Twilight movies?
No, Elle Fanning. No, she was. I did a TV show called The Great with her. She's not like Michelle Pfeiffer out there kind of thing, but she's, you'll know her when you see her kind of thing. Yeah.
And then I can never say his name, Jake Gyllenhaal.
Jake Gyllenhaal. Yeah. Yeah.
So what was it like working with them in that chapter of your life?
Yeah, it sort of varies. I did a good 9 months on a TV show called The Great with Elle Fanning. And that was really one of my first acting jobs. I say the acting very loosely. Again, I was kind of, a couple of lines here and there. But I was kind of a presence on it the whole time. We filmed in Italy and it was really like hanging out with the cast and crew. And that was really my introduction to acting, and I thought, well, I should have done this years ago, I've like made it. and then the sort of jobs got a bit fewer and further between, and just personal things for me, like I worked on Expendables 4 with Sylvester Stallone.
I love
like
that.
Very different. Yeah, I mean, for me growing up in the 80s, that was kind of I was like, Sylvester Stallone, that was just so bizarre. And I think that whole acting world as well, because like one day you're sitting around in your underwear and then the next day you're like saying good morning to Tom Cruise or something. It's so sporadic and it's just so unreal. And I feel that there's very much a hierarchy of things. For example, Sylvester Stallone, like you can see that he didn't need to speak to me if he didn't need to speak to me kind of thing, whereas someone like Elle Fanning or actually even Jake Gyllenhaal, I don't know, depends on the person. They're a lot more friendly and will say good morning and talk about lunch or something like that, it's been interesting being in proximity with those people, and just funnily enough opened up other things again. Also, like from the Expendables movie with Sylvester Stallone, that kind of took me into a really, wouldn't have seen this coming. Like I talk at prisons now, so they'll watch the Expendables 4. Yeah. That seems to be the thing.
Yeah,
I guess it suits them to know the environment. And then I'll show up after the movie, talk about the movie a little bit, and then I'll kind of inevitably weave it towards personal growth and spirituality and things like that. And that's just, again, just it. All these paths have sort of just opened up this direction somehow. It all kind of leads to this. Yeah.
Yeah, I understand. So, okay, this is going to be a bit emotional for me now. So my mom died in 2023.
All right. Yeah, I'm sorry.
Yeah. And what it's going to say, I'm going to ask you what happened, but I'm going to tell you what happened to me.
Sure.
Because I haven't really ever told anyone this, but I knew my mum was going to go, and yeah. I knew they were giving her this little bit of morphine, and I knew. So I held her hand in my, her head in my hands, and her eyes went bright blue, and all around her became a white light.
Wow.
And I saw that happen.
Yeah.
Took my son out because it was time for him to leave, and went back, and she never woke up again.
Yeah.
But it was the most amazing, and because I believe in all that,
yeah,
to see it straight in front of me was quite a bit. Well, I thought if I ever told the story, everyone would think I'm mad, but now I've shared it with people. So what happened to you?
That's amazing. Obviously circumstances are what they are, but to have something like that, I would have, so such a strange thing to say, because obviously you're losing that one person that's been there for your whole life, and it's devastating, and I'm still grieving, like 5 years on. But yeah, the thing that happened around her passing really, I don't know, I don't know how to word it. I don't want to say parting gift, but again, it's just my life. If she'd still be around, I wouldn't be talking to you now. I wouldn't have wrote these books, and it's very bittersweet. I would take my mum still being here over all of it all day, which goes without saying. So what happened? I'd always been on the fence about spiritual things. I hadn't really dove that much into it. I got very cynical somewhere in my mid-30s and was thinking, oh, there's nothing to this. We just live, we die, and done. And then other times of life, I was thinking, actually, I don't know, that doesn't really make sense. It makes more sense to me that there's something more. But I'd never really explored it fully. So we went through the pandemic. My mum was on the Isle of Wight. I was in London. and we would FaceTime every day. And I thought that I was doing the right thing by keeping away from her. She was 76 years old. She had a few age-related health problems, but I just kind of, she'd always bounce back from everything. So I didn't really see it coming. Although all the signs were there with hindsight, but at the time I was just speaking to her every day. I was seeing her every day, at least on phone calls. And I think the last time that I saw her physically was around October. She was supposed to come to London for Christmas. And then if you cast your mind back to that, there was a whole hassle around it. And she was about to come, and then she kind of got freaked out and didn't come. So I hadn't seen her for a couple of months. And we were into January, and just to sort of frame it a little bit as well, I've got a couple of cousins in the Midlands, but we didn't have any other family down there. It was January on the Isle of Wight. So she was very isolated. And it was, you know, middle of winter. And I think it was also another lockdown at this point. Although I think everyone was kind of didn't care by that point. So just setting the scene there, I'd FaceTime with her a couple of times on this particular day. She would have nurses come and check on her twice a day, in the morning and then at 6 p.m. in the evening, very specifically. And they wouldn't really do anything. I think they were volunteers. They would just keep her company for 20 minutes, make her a cup of tea, make sure she took her meds, and then go. And that was kind of her social interaction for the day. So I spoke to her the last time around 10 o'clock at night, and she would keep her phone charging in the hallway, right? And I'm being very specific about this, but as she leant over the phone, which is on the floor, she'd hit answer or something like that or whatever, and on the video call. And as she was leaning in one side of the call, there was a man leaning in from the other side of the call. And first of all, I was kind of shocked, like, who the hell is that? You know, it was 10 o'clock at night. There shouldn't have been anyone there. It was locked down and blah, 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 blah. All the things that I just went through. And I saw him long enough that I could describe him. He had thinning gray hair, glasses, looked like he was maybe late 60s, something like that. Quite gaunt looking. And he was there, plain as day. He wasn't an apparition. He was, as far as I was concerned, I immediately thought, well, it's one of these nurses that would show up. But then at the same time, it was way too late for them to be there. And as she picked the phone up, he went out of shot. And I said, well, so who's that? And she said, who's what? And I said, okay, well, I said, the guy that I just saw. I was like, who's the guy? And she kind of just didn't really acknowledge it. She was like, no, there's no. And I said, what? Sorry, Mom. I said, I just saw someone. I said, who's in the house? And she said, no one, you know, they came at 6 o'clock and they were driving me nuts. And she was sort of complaining. And I could always tell when somebody was with her, because she would put on airs and graces. She would speak a lot posher, and she wouldn't swear and things like that. And she wasn't doing any of that. She was probably swearing and just kind of complaining about these nurses and what have you. And I must have interrupted her once or twice more and essentially established that she was saying she was on her own. And I thought, okay, well, what was that then? You know, like I just kind of, I didn't think too deeply on it. It just didn't make sense. And I just sort of dismissed it. I thought, well, I guess I was mistaken then. With hindsight now, with the arena that I'm in now, I would have looked at it very differently. But at the time, I was like, well, I didn't know what to attribute it to, like a glitch on the phone, mm-hmm. a reflection or something. I just dealt with it and forgot about it. And I thought, well, that's that. There's no one there with her. And we talked for another 45 minutes. She didn't acknowledge anyone or say goodbye to anyone or anything like that. She went to bed. I went to bed. And the next morning, I had a phone call from the neighbor and these nurses that they couldn't get into the house. And then when they did, she'd had a heart attack and she'd passed away. So yeah, you know, the grief and everything that comes with it and going through all of that was just a horrible, horrible shock. But then my mind just kept going back. And then I was like, okay, well, what was that about then? You know, what's the timing with that? And what are we talking here? Are we talking ghosts? Are we talking spirit guides? He didn't look like a family member. So it wasn't like he looked like my uncle or something, because that's kind of where my mind went. I went down to the house and immediately kind of just looked around. I was thinking, well, there's a mirror over there. Could that have been in shot? Somehow I was just trying to sort of look for what it could have been, essentially. And I just couldn't find any logical explanation for this guy. And I'd seen him. Plain as day. I mean, I was the only one who saw him. After the phone call, just to backtrack a little bit, I went into the other room. My partner, she was like, okay, well, what was all that about? And I said, oh, I thought I saw a guy. But so I kind of at least verified it with someone at the time. and you know, that was that really. And through the following months, I just really, I thought on it a lot, and I would tell people about it. I'd be quite selective about who I told about it. My more skeptical friends would be, well, how do you know that there was no one there? Because, you know, you weren't there. And I was like, well, yeah, I wasn't there. I can't say 100% that there was no one with her in the house. And then my more spiritual friends would say, well, yeah, that was a sign. That was a spirit guide. That was
absolutely,
that's the go-to. Yeah. And just to wrap that part up, I dove into some pretty standard spiritual literature that I read in the past, like Neil Donald Walsh and things like this. In a sort of effort to console myself somehow. And the logical conclusion that I came to was that was someone letting me know. And that just opened up this whole arena for me. And I sort of went on from there. Yeah.
Right.
Again, well, sorry, very long-winded.
No, that's absolutely fine. We're just going to listen to our sponsors. But when we get back, I'm going to be talking to Phil a little bit more about this. And how he works with his clients and practical spirituality.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
What if your worst dreams aren't your enemy?
Falling, cheating, being chased, naked, drowning, losing teeth. What if I fail? What if something goes wrong?
I'm Teresa Chung, dream expert, best-selling author, and co-host of The Healing Power of Your Dreams. And in my latest title, Extreme Dreaming, I reveal a powerful truth. There are no bad dreams.
They feel so real, but that's so you remember them.
They're messages, signals, transformative gifts guiding you toward clarity.
Click on the Extreme Dreaming discount banner link on UK Health Radio homepage and learn to decode even your darkest dreams.
Extreme Dreaming.
Are you ready to listen?
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Hi, we're back. I don't want to move on from your conversation before the break, but there's so many questions I want to ask you. So I am going to, and I'll talk to you after the show about the rest of it. A phrase that really stands out in your work is demystifying the mystical. What does that mean to you?
For me, that means that I feel that this whole thing is mystical, crazy. It's, you know, I think we've just got used to it, right? I think that just, I've had a few other experiences along the way prior to my mum passing, and one which we might go into at some point, which really had me sort of questioning reality at one point. This is a whole other long-winded story. But I didn't really attribute it to anything spiritual, although with hindsight, again, it very much was. I feel like it was a very powerful awakening that I didn't recognize as an awakening at the time. But yeah, I feel that demystifying the mystical, I think this whole thing is mystical. Like I often say to people, well, just, you know, look at time. Tell me what's that, right? You know, and it's, exactly. You know, we just kind of, we move along and we're, okay, this is that. But no one's figured it out, right? And just nobody knows what happens after all this is done still, despite all of our good intentions and the things that people like yourself and me dive into, we still don't know. Nobody knows. I think
I get that, but I always remember my friend Lulu and my friend Lizetta. Yeah.
Yeah.
And we said to each other, if one of us die before the other, let's come back and we give you these signs. Yeah.
Yeah.
And both of my friends died within a year of each other when in my 40s, and they both came back with those exact other side of the door stuff.
Yeah.
But I cannot but believe that there is, whatever it is, I definitely believe there's something else.
Yeah,
that's my thing.
Me too. I tend to have a very skeptical brain, like always, and it's odd, even with myself. And going into this arena, you meet lots of people, right, that are into spirituality, and I talk at festivals and things like that. And I can't dismiss anyone else's experiences because I didn't have them, right? So who am I to say that what somebody tells me is true or isn't true?
Yeah.
Or if they saw 10 UFOs last night. But I'm always like, really? Did you? You know, I just can't help it. But I feel in a way also sort of serves me well in a bit, a little bit, because it maybe helps other people sort of get on board with it when I'm coming at it from a very skeptical framework. I don't know why, I just can't switch it off. Even though I've experienced lots of amazing things, like you said as well, along those lines, I studied with mediums and gave people readings myself that I know, told them things that I absolutely know I didn't know, right? And that they would have been the most specific things, and they've been like, yeah, that's it. So I 100% believe in this. But yeah, I feel that, sorry to just go back to it, demystifying the mystical, I think it's not that crazy. You know, we have these terms like, we'll walk into a room and you can cut the air with a knife, or you can't quite put your finger on something, and we have all these kind of sayings for it. But then within certain circles, if you started using words like clairvoyance or clairtangence, then people would just be like, what, right?
Yeah.
Talking about the same thing, like it's just a different way of framing it. And when you start talking about it seriously, although I think things are changing, I feel that people are more open to this now, that you can have these conversations more than you maybe could have done 20 years ago, in a sort of general sense. I mean, that people don't just immediately look at you like you're nuts. But yeah, I think that all of these things, you know, we all have these moments of intuition. It's just sometimes a question of semantics, like how you frame it, or you know, how much attention you want to pay to it. I think it's there all the time. Yeah.
I think you're right that it's good to have the opposite opinion. It's good to be say, I don't believe, because for the people that do believe, they I believe, the believe and the non-believe, I believe you get given more signs. The more people go against it. I think I've told this story before. I was at a networking meeting, and this man, we had to stand up and give this for many years, have to give our 2 minutes or whatever. And he came out afterwards, and obviously I'm a Feng Shui and Chinese astrologer, and he said, I don't believe anything you say, it's rubbish.
Yeah,
I said, shake my hand. So he did. And I said, does your wife know about your other daughter that you have, about your other daughter that's not in this?
Wow, hitting them with the big guns.
big guns. If you don't believe, you don't want to come near me. But what I'm saying is, it's, you know, you don't need to shock, and we can live in our own world. But people listening to this, who believe in all what we're talking about, they need this confirmation. That's what I'm saying, really.
Yeah.
So you work with clients daily. What are the most common challenges? Obviously, I'm not saying give your clients away, but.
And yeah, hopefully without putting anyone off ever coming to me, because bread and butter. But for me personally, I've got to be careful how I frame this. Talking about relationships a lot. Most people want to talk about relationships. Will he come back to me? Will she come back to me? Should, you know? And again, I want to tread tentatively. As for me, I would rather talk about this all day long. Like I have people, and forgive me, my real main interest is somebody that might have been through an awakening that needs guidance. So really like going down that path, somebody that wants to develop, for want of a better word, psychic skills, I found very rewarding. On the other side of it, I do give people readings and tell them what's going on with them, and it gets a little bit challenging to talk about. You know, I want to be respectful to people, but if you haven't heard from her for the last year, I don't know if you need me to tell you that she's not coming back. I'd forgive me, sorry. It's that cynicism again, sorry.
No, that is actually really funny. What I did like, which you just said, and I may have to talk after break about this, but you said, and I get this because I'm a Reiki master teacher, that people have this intuition, and this is something you said, that they come to you and they want to learn more about it. And I think this is really good, actually, Phil, because I don't think a lot of people know where to go. They may have these weird moments or whatever they want to call them. But actually they're being told something, and having people like you in the world that can say, right, come on, this is what happened. You become their mentor on it, and how they learn to grow the intuition or whatever you want to call it. I think that's really important to have.
Yeah. I wrote a book called Letting Glow, which was really about that exact experience. The book starts with my mum passing. And then I go back to talking about this profound awakening that I told you about. If I start going on about that, I'll be going on for 15 minutes again.
You've only got three before the adverts.
Okay. Well, I wrote about my experience, and I was very surprised about how many people got in touch with me, emailed me and said, oh, okay, I went through that. And thank God somebody else talked about it, because I personally thought I was losing my mind. Doctors started using words like psychosis. I thought I was quite literally at the end of my rope, until I found a therapist who said, no, this is an awakening. Right. And sort of reframed it for me. At the time, I just dealt with it and moved on. And then looking back on it, I was like, okay, yeah, that was very much an awakening. And I've been very amazed at how many people have been through something very similar and got in touch. And yeah, I feel that in that instance, someone that's been through it or that understands that what you went through, I'm not a doctor, I'm not qualified to say if somebody has a mental disorder or if it's a spiritual awakening, but I wonder how many do get misdiagnosed.
I do go. So I'm just going to hand over to our sponsors, and when we come back, we will talk to Phil about his books and what's coming up next.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
What if your healing journey could feel empowering, hopeful, even transformative? Welcome to the Alkaline Collective Mastermind, a community for anyone facing cancer, staying cancer-free, or committed to prevention. No matter your stage, whether you've chosen conventional care, an integrative path, or a fully holistic approach, here, you're not alone. Here, your healing journey becomes a journey of empowerment. We explore the science of oxygenation, metabolism, and alkalinity, while strengthening your emotional, spiritual, and physical well-being. This is a mastermind with heart, accountability, connection, wisdom, and real support. Because your journey isn't just about surviving, it's about thriving. Join us by clicking on the Alkaline Collective Mastermind banner on the UK Health Radio homepage or directly at alkaline-collective.com, where self-belief grows, healing deepens, and transformation begins.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
So, hey, we're back. Let's talk about your books, Letting Glow and Glowing Deeper. What inspired you for them to write?
Sure.
Although I've got a funny feeling it's your mum.
Yeah, I mean, the first one was really about that. I just kind of started pouring my grief into it. I think I maybe started it after about 6 months or so. I started learning about mediumship. One of the first things I did when I was looking through all this spiritual literature that I mentioned before, I came across a book called What the Dead Are Dying to Teach Us by a medium called Claire Broad. I don't know if you've ever come across her. Very quickly, I saw that she was giving a workshop at the College of Psychic Studies in London, which at the time I thought that sounds ridiculous, right? I thought it sounded like Hogwarts or something. But I went along and very quickly hit it off with Claire. And there was just so many synchronicities fell into place. When I opened Claire's book, I didn't know where she was from. She could have been Australian, American, or what have you. Her first story in the book was about her first experience of mediumship when she was a little girl in a cemetery. And that cemetery was across the street from where I lived. And again, Claire, she could have been from California. I don't know who she was. And I thought, well, what a strange coincidence, you know? Yeah. And then when I met her, we very quickly bonded. And then she became really my first teacher in mediumship. And I think mediumship was really and I think a lot of people find it after losing someone, that you need that validation that person's still around in some way. Mm-hmm. And that was really why I explored it. I don't think that mediumship is kind of my final destination. In my work elements of it do come in, but I don't call myself a medium. It seems that I've gone more kind of a psychic route. I hate that word as well, psychic. So really the first book was just really me documenting that journey, and there's a lot of meditations in there. And if you were to step into this arena for the first time, I feel like it's a soft introduction to spiritual practices. By the time I'd finished it, I'd learned so much that I just felt like I've got another book in me. So the second book was less about me, and it was more just about different spiritual practices around the world and things like that. Yeah.
So why have you got a problem with psychic?
I don't know. It's the stigma around it. I just from somebody that used to be very cynical and still am to an extent. I'll use every word but psychic. I'll use energy counselor, intuitive guy, like anything. I just can't use the word psychic. I don't know.
I think I hear where you're coming from, teasing. Yeah. Because I remember being a child and all that sort of thing, and you know, the intuition and the priests and everything that went with that.
Yeah.
So your new book, which is coming out later this year, can you give us a preview for our listeners? What's it going
to be? Yeah, I think this is the first time that I've spoke about it. It's called A Soul Being, and it's going to be released through Local Legend. Maybe towards the end of the year after the summer. We just finished the whole editing process. That's really diving in. I feel that it was a conversation. I mentioned Neil Donald Walsh. I think it's along the lines of that. That I was asking questions and the questions were coming back. I essentially feel it's a channeled book, very much a channeled book. The stuff that came through, it's way smarter than me. Like I know that I don't think that I've got it. This information sort of buried in the recesses somewhere. When I read back on it now, it's still like reading it for the first time. Like none of that stuff has really stuck. Right. And that's what very much makes me feel that it's from elsewhere and not me. It was fascinating. It just took me about 2 years to write it. I had a really odd start. I was in Iraq shooting a TV show in Kurdistan, and it was right at the start of everything that we're still, you know, the world's dealing with now. But it was that first month of things going south around there. And pretty much as I started writing the book, it pretty much starts with saying you should probably go. Like from where I was right then, quite a dramatic start. And you know, I don't want to belittle, of course, everything that's going on there. So like, you know, this, I'm not claiming that I'm anything part of that. I just happen to be in proximity to that as it was beginning. And I took the advice and we quickly left and everything very much escalated. But it was just quite for want of a better word, exotic start. I hadn't, like after writing those first two books, I felt like I'd sort of hit a wall, or like plateaued with the psychic stuff. And I do wonder, it was just an odd place to be. I just randomly ended up there, and it was in a place called Erbil, where they've got a big citadel, which is essentially supposed to be what's pretty much agreed upon, like the birthplace of spiritual writing. And I thought, well, an odd place to sort of just kick off from again then. I don't want to make it too grandiose, but I just thought, could that have had something to do with it? Was it the place, the energy in the place that kind of brought this up? Just to go back to the book itself, it's a lot. It's basically me asking the deeper questions and answers coming through.
Yeah, I interviewed someone the other day and I could tell she was channeling. I found it fascinating because it was an audio for my listeners. And I could see it, because obviously I do NLP, so I could see it all coming through really, really strong. So the new book, I sort of get you're doing it because obviously I'm a Feng Shui consultant, so I understand energies in different place. Yeah. When you got back, has it got a title yet?
It's called A Soul Being.
A Soul Being. Okay. So hopefully it will be out by the end of the year. And I will tell our listeners when it's coming out and share it for you.
Maybe I'll be talking about it nonstop, I'm sure.
Maybe have you back on. What in that particular book, what do you hope your readers will take away with it from it?
Yeah, it's quite odd. Like this is another thing when I think about it, I feel like I didn't write it. It's really odd. Like when I try to think of something to tell you about from it, it's kind of blank, right? It's like somebody else wrote it. I feel that it's essentially just saying that we're, I didn't get a name. It wasn't like I got, you know, Archangel Gabriel or something like that. Yeah. I was sort of alternating between calling whatever I was talking to my intuition, my higher self, my spirit guide, and a kind of whatever was that I was conversing with. It's like, yeah, all of that fits, whatever makes you feel most comfortable. And so I didn't really dive into that too much. Just that I feel that we all do have this inherent knowing that I talk to a lot of my clients about meditation and about being able to step back from your thoughts and connecting with your true consciousness and sort of realizing that you're not your thoughts, that you're the one observing your thoughts. And I feel that I tapped into something there, right? And, or at the very least, I opened up the space where something came in to that space, right? So I've got all of this worries going on here. I'm going to feed the cat, or I've got to be there and what have you. And then I'm over here like observing all this. And I feel that when you meditate, that's kind of what you connect with, that sort of backseat observer. And I feel that like whatever space I created, something else was coming in there and telling me all this really profound stuff. Yeah, lots to do with time not existing and
we just synchronize for time. Oh, it's breakfast. Oh, it's time to go to bed. Time, as you say, is a different thing, especially when you like travel a lot, because you can be 8 hours behind and you were like 2 hours ahead a little while ago. So
it's nuts, right? And then we put the clocks back or forward or whatever it is, and we all pretend that it's like 4 o'clock now instead of 3 o'clock. And yeah, I don't know. But
okay, so where can my listeners find out more about your work, your books, your meditations, your workshops?
Yeah, so I've got my website. I've got philwebster.com. That's Phil with two L's. I offer readings, like I say. I also offer guidance. I do traditional life coaching as well. I've just got a counseling qualification, so I kind of try to bridge between the more practical stuff, although it does seem that pretty much everyone comes to me for the psychic stuff. I've also got like a members area on there where I've done a lot of guided meditations and a couple of workshops for a pretty reasonable price, like a monthly subscription as well. And then of course I'm also on UK Health Radio now with Teresa Chung and Kelly Sullivan Walden, and I'm completely blanking on the name of the show that we're on.
Wednesdays at 3 o'clock.
Lovely. Thank you.
There you go. I don't know the name. I can't remember now. I know Teresa Chong. She's one of my friends.
The Healing Power of Your Dreams, I believe. That's it.
Amazing, amazing. So, Phil, thank you for joining us today. It's been insightful, more than I can tell you, and uplifting.
No, thank you very much. It's been nice to talk.
I know our listeners will have taken so much from your wisdom. And the other thing you've given that I haven't made a note of, you've been real.
Oh, thanks very much. Yeah, I mean, I can only talk about my own experience, you know. If someone doesn't get it or doesn't believe it, I totally understand it. If they do, then great. Yeah.
Okay. Thanks, Phil.
Thanks. Again.
Thanks so much for tuning in to Feng Shui Your Way. I can't wait to share more insights and inspirations with you in the next episode. Remember, life is all about creating harmony and welcoming positive energy into your world. Until next time, stay balanced and keep your energy flowing.